Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
You know, oftentimes it seems like the loudest voice that we hear on important cultural issues is the liberal voice. Well, today on Family Talk, our guest will talk candidly about how conservatives can thoughtfully engage with a secular culture. Here now is Dr. James Dobson to open this fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, James Dobson. The liberal media has a certain image of the conservative woman. And frankly, it's not a very positive one. She's usually a little frumpy and can't speak or think for herself, and she's just sort of waiting to hit you on the head with her big Bible. I guess that's the image they have. I've heard that a number of times. Now we know that that's far from true. And my guest today is living proof. Her name is Penny Young Nance, and she's the president and CEO of Concerned Women for America, the nation's largest public policy women's organization. And she's the author of a book called Feisty and Feminine. Sounds like my wife Shirley, as a matter of fact. And she encourages conservative women to stand up, to be heard, and make a difference in our culture today. I have great respect for Penny and for the work that she and CWA do, and we're going to talk about that today. This is, Penny, your second trip to this organization.
That's right, and thank you for your kind words. I'm very humbled by all that. Dr. Dobson, it's an honor to be here with you today.
Well, you made a long journey to be here.
Yes.
You live in
Fairfax,
Washington, D.C.
I live in Fairfax. Our office is in Washington, D.C., about a block from the White House. We're right in the middle of things, which can be good and bad, so I'm enjoying the beautiful peacefulness of Colorado today.
Well, you're right in the middle of things, as you put it. Especially political matters. You're fighting for the things that we believe and stand for, and I'm glad that you are on the job. CWA was started by Bev LaHaye.
Correct.
A great friend of mine. She has stepped down. Is she involved at all?
Yes. She's the chairman of our organization, not necessarily on a daily basis, but certainly as the, you know, senior statesman in our organization, I reach out to her on a regular basis for her wisdom. I mean, there's nothing that I, in my 7 years as the president of CWA, that I've come up against that she hasn't already seen and has such wise counsel, and I'm grateful for it. She's really just instilled so much, and she built the organization so solidly that I get to reap the benefits of that.
How many members does CWA have now?
So we have about 500,000 members. We have people, and by the way, I hope that if your listeners are on social media, they'll follow us on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram. We're involved in social media, reaching out to younger women. We have 400 adult chapters and 35 and counting college chapters that we call Young Women for America around this country. So we are just really feeling the momentum of what's going on in this nation and really working hard to train up the next generation of women, conservative Christian leaders, to be in the fray, to be the Esthers of this generation, and to speak truth to power. And we constantly are swimming against the media narrative that you talked about some of them, but mostly it's that we're all liberal, right? And that we all are pro-abortion and we all believe X, when the truth is nothing could be further from the truth.
When you said that you have more than 500,000 members, that's more than National Organization for Women or any of the liberal organizations.
Well, funny story. I get to speak to college people all the time because of our college chapters. And on more than one occasion, I've said now, without saying National Organization for Women, but even when I say National Organization for Women, I get blank stares. They don't even know who they are. They have no idea who they are. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Well, that's called #winning, that they don't even know who now has fallen so far off the radar that they're irrelevant at this point. And so I'm grateful that
the media doesn't know who you are either,
right,
for the most part. The CWA, they prefer to ignore you as much as possible because you stand for the opposite of what the mainstream liberal media is trying to promote.
Yes. And it's gotten harder and harder for them to ignore us because our numbers have grown and because, you know, I do get to do a lot of media. But every now and then I get a little reminder about how much they detest us, and happened actually recently. And, you know, it's always a little wake-up call to not get too comfortable, to understand that our views are not welcome in the mainstream media, that they want to reduce us to caricatures of ourselves, and that we have to be on point and we have to be informed and ready to go. And hopefully that's what my book does. My book is a tool for women who want to have the hard conversations about the hardest issues we face, whether it's marriage or religious freedom, whether it's talking about support for Israel, whether it's talking about the real war on women, which is the abuse and rape and murder of women in the Middle East at the hands of Islamic fascists.
They don't even talk about that.
No. No, they don't. They pretend it's not happening.
It's amazing what's taking place. They have no rights in Middle Eastern countries at all.
No. I mean, not even in places like Saudi Arabia. You know, recently women just got the right to vote in Saudi Arabia, but they weren't allowed to drive themselves to the polls. Yeah. And so they're, you know, let's not pretend that somehow that, you know, these majority Islamic countries or Muslim countries are the friend of women. Real women's rights, which are real women's human rights and liberty, are often infringed, as well as homosexuals. Homosexuals are put in prison and murdered in those countries. And so somehow, you know, the left has not been willing to look at the truth. So, again, the point of my book is to teach people statistics, science, information that they can get into the conversation, have a conversation across the fence, at playgroup, on their campus, in their church, wherever they need to do it, but then be able to face their friend the next day so that it's in a way that's informative and kind, and it comes from a place of humility, but yet is firm and truthful.
Penny, let's speak really openly here. Because the election's over and we have a new president, and all of the political fall that took place throughout the last 2 years is over, and the IRS does not restrict us in talking about that now that it's over.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
We got a lot to say.
Were you deeply involved in the election?
Yes. Well, like you, Dr. Dobson, Donald Trump was not my first choice. But when it came down to a binary choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, there was no question. We had to get him elected. And so, you know, my part was to speak out as an individual, as an evangelical woman, and to speak truth and talk about what the differences were between the two and why that it was important for conservatives to go and evangelical women to go support Trump. I went to Trump Tower the week before election to do a media in support of him, and was joined by Billy Graham's granddaughter and Franklin Graham's daughter, Sissy Graham Lynch, who is a sweet, wonderful young leader. And we talked about the issues and talked about
You were actually meeting with Donald Trump.
Well, yes, but doing media on his behalf.
Yes.
And talking in those outlets in which evangelical women listened and able to have the conversation about, you are not just voting for one person. When you go into the booth and pull the lever, you're voting for an entire system of government. You're voting for the Supreme Court. You're voting for the lower court judges. You're voting for 5,000 government appointees who run our government and have all sorts of authority over your life. And so there is a lot at stake here. And as you know, 81% of evangelical women and men, there was no gender gap, voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, all through the election, we were told that Donald Trump had a major problem with women.
Yes.
Actually, he had a 53 to 46, 47 percent advantage over white women.
Yes.
I don't know if that's true of minority women, but he won the white women's vote.
Yes. And
after telling us all for 2 years that he had a major problem with women.
You know, the minority divide is not new to Republicans, and it's something Republicans need to work on. But the fact that he carried white women, that was what they thought he was going to bleed out over, and it didn't happen. I mean, it was the reverse of what they said. And I think it was because women were able to look past, because you had two candidates, both of whom had their own issues, right? And so it's not as if Hillary Clinton is this, you know, bastion of moral propriety. I mean, people were concerned about the fact that what the foundation was doing, you know, the fact that the cronyism that and the way that, you know, that the Clintons have always run their business and run their lives. And the fact that the lack of accountability of the Clintons was such a turnoff to women all over this country. So you had a lot of blue-collar women, working women, that thought, she can't relate to me. She has no idea what I'm going through. Mm. The idea that she was broke.
You never heard that on the media.
No, never.
Well, like you, Penny, I did not start out supporting Trump. I was actually campaigning in one or two instances for Ted Cruz, and I really thought he would make a strong Christian. I like him as a man. A lot of what the media said about him was not true. But when he withdrew and it came down to two candidates, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, I mean, when you look at the Supreme Court, when you look at Planned Parenthood,
right,
when you look at all aspects of abortion, when you look at the issue of marriage, so many things. There was only one choice for me.
Clearly.
And since Donald Trump has been elected president, I think he's doing a pretty good job, despite the hatred that's being thrown at him.
That's right. I mean, I agree. In fact, I was grateful to get to sit down with him in the Oval Office about a week ago and with Vice President Pence and talk about Judge Gorsuch. He's a constitutionalist. He believes in the original text of the Constitution, and that's what we should be looking for in a judge. And I was expressing to him some of the ways that we're going to be supporting that effort, and CWA is on the front lines of that issue. But like you said, you know, listen, we have 56 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. The idea of safe, legal, and rare is a joke. $500 million a year of our tax money is going to prop up the number one purveyor of abortion in this country, which is Planned Parenthood. We can easily shift that money away from Planned Parenthood to the community health centers who actually do care about poor women, who care for their health, care for the whole woman. So we think we can really care for poor women without paying for abortions in this country. So we're working very diligently alongside Donald Trump and with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan to shift funding away in upcoming legislation. And let me just say, and you know this, that, you know, Donald Trump won, but we have got to stay engaged, because in order to do all the things he's promised, we have to get it onto his desk. We have to get the 20-week ban on his desk. We've got to stand in support of these appointees that he has. So our job's not in any way, shape, or fashion done. There's a lot to do.
How much prayer do you think was uttered by conservative Christian women coming up to this election?
Well, I know for our part, Concerned Women for America did a program of 30 days of prayer and fasting leading up to the election. And I got to tell you, this election did great things for my own prayer life. There was a lot of mornings down on my knees beseeching God, because I couldn't bear the idea of what was going to happen to the country if Hillary Clinton won.
Religious liberty, I didn't mention that a minute ago, but that was on the ropes. Our
Absolutely.
Opportunities to have, you know, constitutional protection for the things we believe as Christians was it would have gone away essentially.
Yes, and we've still got to continue to fight that battle. I mean, we're working right now to try to make sure an executive order goes through at some point. We need some legislation to protect. And I know you had Kelly Shackelford on talking about the religious liberty cases. Baronella Stutzman, who's the florist, who has artistic expression in her flowers, is being forced by the government to serve someone in a religious capacity for a religious ceremony that is against her conscience. But yet Tom Ford is fine to take a pass and not make a dress for the First Lady. I would say Tom Ford is completely within his rights not to make a dress for the First Lady. But I would also say that Baronella Stutzman, protected by the First Amendment, right to religious freedom, religious conscience, should never be forced. And this is going to fight all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, I'm anxious to get to the theme of your book, and it's a good one, and I recommend it. Before we do that, one more question. What is the mood of the conservative Christian community, if you can think of them as a community?
Right.
And with 500,000 members, you've got a community there. What are they thinking now? How are they feeling about the family and about about marriage, about motherhood? And, you know, the issue of abortion and so many other things. What's going on?
I think that women of faith, and particularly conservative women, feel affirmed because of this election. We feel empowered. We know that we're no longer alone. We were never alone. But, of course, the media narrative is that we are alone and that we're if we believe a certain thing, then you're bigots and you just need to shut up and be quiet and go away. And suddenly we feel empowered to share our beliefs and understand that we're not alone, that we, although the country in some ways is post-Christian, we haven't drifted so far that we don't have those underpinnings, and we still need to have the ability to share our faith. So, yes, I think people feel very affirmed and passionate, but, you know,
relieved.
And, you know, the other thing, something I said to the transition team is like, look, you know, you've got to understand people are feeling, you know, very excited and are happy, but you've got to make sure that the difference between an optimist and a cynic is an optimist that's been betrayed. And then I said, no pressure, but but you've got to get this right. And I believe the fact that, because here's the thing, people don't really understand this. They say, well, he's got 4 years. In reality, it doesn't work that way. You really only have about 6 months in a new administration to get the toughest things done. Because after that, your political capital starts to wane. Plus, there's all the work that Congress has to do to keep the trains running on time and to keep the government running. So the fact that he is pushing so much so fast is because they know that. And they're working very hard to make good on the promises that were made in the campaign.
Well, again, let's talk about your book. But I appreciate you being here. And it's a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for what you're doing. You're on the front lines. You literally are.
Thank you. It's an honor to do it.
All right. Feisty and feminine. What does that mean?
Well, this book was, you mentioned a little bit in your introduction, and that was perfect. You know, I have heard the same labeling of conservative women. And as the head of a women's organization, I know how far from the truth it is. I get to travel all over the country and meet conservative women who are funny, who are very well educated, very successful, passionate, are able to do so many things at one time, whether they're a stay-at-home mom, whether they're working outside the home, whether they're doctors or lawyers or teachers or whatever they're doing. And these are amazing, interesting women, beautiful women. But I did realize something that really the impetus between the book is I had an experience I talk about in the first chapter of being in a situation at my husband's work, at a work event. And my husband works for a corporation from people all over the country. So we were there with the top executives and a lot of people we didn't know. And no one knew what I did for a living because I was in a spouse role. You know, when you're in a spouse role, you're there to support your spouse. Or if I'm there with my kids, I'm there in the stands to clap for them, not to talk about myself. So anyway, long story short, and you can read about it, you know, in the first chapter of the book, but I end up being in a situation where my husband simply mentioned that our daughter one day would like to grow up and work for Fox News, and everybody went, Fox News. And like suddenly we were outed as these conservatives and they kind of all turned on us. And I literally on the way home, and I don't really say this in the book, but I cried on the way home. Like I was so hurt because I knew where I was. I was at a and I'm doing air quotes. You can't see me. I was at a holiday party, right? And at a holiday party, you're not supposed to talk politics and you're not supposed to talk religion. And you're supposed to say happy holidays, which I never do anyway, even though I'm supposed to. But I knew not to, you know, I wasn't there to talk about myself. And so I thought, oh my goodness, if I'm this stung and got caught in a situation that I wasn't prepared for, this must be happening to women all over the country. And I know how to defend. I get paid to defend what we believe, right? And so, you know, there have been those times when I get this little wake-up call of what it's like to be out there. And so I just wanted to create a tool for women that they, and by the way, this is not a book to sit on the shelf. This is a book to pull out, rip out pages, highlight what you want to remember, stick in your purse, pull it out during carpool and kind of go back over it. So you're ready. Just like Esther, when Esther had her moment to speak power, she didn't just rush in and tell the king what she wanted to tell him. She prayed and she prepared. And so this is the preparation. We are to pray and to prepare for that hard conversation around the family dinner table with your college kid, with your family at Thanksgiving or Christmas, with your neighbor, with your PTA. You have to be prepared so that you can share something that perhaps will open up a door to have a warm, friendly conversation, and you can share your beliefs because we should never get caught staring at our shoes because we don't know what to say.
You talk in this book about the Esther woman. Mm-hmm. Who is she? What does she do? How does she think? Are there a lot of Esther women out there? Well, in your organization and throughout the country?
Well, I think that's the point. The Lord is calling forward the Esthers of this generation.
Well, and what does that mean?
That means the woman that is listening to my voice right now, and I have touched something in her heart, and she knows she has something to share, whether it's in her neighborhood or whether it's any of the other areas that I've talked about. It is the Esther is the woman who is speaking truth, speaking God's truth to power, whether it's, you know, your pastor even. If you're in a liberal church, and I just shared with Dr. Dobson, I was somewhere recently where I was told in a very shocking, at a Christian school, it wasn't Liberty University, by the way, that I wasn't to talk about Israel. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, have we come this far that we're not going to talk about the, because some people, you know, it's controversial. I don't think it's controversial. I think it's in the Bible.
I won't name it, but I know the school you're talking about, and it takes my breath away. That's been for many, many, for decades, a bastion of conservative Christian biblical thought. And to think that the president of that organization could say to a speaker, don't talk about Israel.
Well,
that,
yes.
You know, that only not only takes my breath away, but it makes me angry.
Yes. Well, and to be fair, it wasn't the president. It was the person running the event, which I'm going to have a conversation with the president to make sure he knows, because I'm not sure if he does or not. But the point is that we run up against these situations where we have got to tell the truth. And by the way, not only are we telling truth that is sometimes painful to hear, and sometimes it is a little hard. Sometimes it's words of grace. I mean, do you know, I have a friend who's a new believer who works in a media company, and she said, you wouldn't dare say the word God or Jesus in her workplace unless it was punctuated by a swear word at the end.
Yeah.
That's completely acceptable. We've got to step up.
Our guest is Penny Nance, and we were here originally to talk today about her book, Feisty and Feminine, and we didn't get very far in there, so would you be with us tomorrow?
I would love that. Sure.
Let's really plunge into the content of this book. I told you I haven't had a chance to read it, but I have had reviews on it. I do know the content of it. I recommend this book to our listeners, especially the women out there who know they should be doing something for our country and something for the Lord, but they're not sure what. Okay. Would you tell them what you think in the next program?
I will do that. Thank you.
Penny, I appreciate you and thank you for being with us today.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Dr. Dobson.
That was Penny Nance here on Family Talk. And if you want to learn more about being an Esther woman in an increasingly secular world, look for Penny's book, Feisty and Feminine. We have a link for that resource at drjamesdobson.org. We also have a link for Concerned Women for America, so you can get the study guide for the book and also find out more about this outstanding organization. Again, start at drjamesdobson.org for more information. And while you're online, would you consider how you can support the work of Family Talk financially? We are committed to bringing you great messages like this one to help you stand for righteousness in the culture today. But we can only do it with your financial support. You can donate securely online at drjamesdobson.org or call us toll-free with your tax-deductible donation at 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for standing with us and for praying for us as well. Be sure to come back again tomorrow for the conclusion of this challenging conversation with Penny Nance right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi everyone, Dr. Tim Clinton here. When you think about your family and where they'll be when you're no longer living, are you worried? Are you confident? You hopeful? What kind of a legacy are you leaving for your children and their children right now? Here at Family Talk, we're committed to helping you understand the legacy that you're leaving your family. Join us today at drjamesdobson.org. You're going to find helpful insights, tips, and advice from Dr. Dobson himself. And remember, your legacy matters.